Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carson. We're a little bit later this week. A couple of things happened this week that we couldn't really record on Wednesday, which we normally do, or sometimes we go on Thursday. So we're talking to you Friday morning, but hopefully as a subscriber, you are listening to us. And if you're not a subscriber and you've just found us, please do subscribe. We're here every single week during the NFL season, chatting all things betting and giving our advice as best we can, which starts, I guess, guys, with the Super Bowl winner, because we discussed it a lot last week. And I guess no one's really out. Listening back to the show last week, we were 50-50 on sort of Bills, Jags, but really did land on the Bills. And with San Francisco, Philly, well, anyone who took San Fran plus four, which was advised, actually 5.5 was advised. But yeah, the Eagles, I don't think he'll see a worse second half in this playoffs than some of the play calling by the Philadelphia Eagles, which we'll get to in a little bit, but it's something that we called out in the number of years. But that Chicago game around Christmas when they basically just gave up. But Super Bowl winner, Seattle Seahawks 13-5, the LA Rams 3-1. The New England Patriots 5-1, the Bills 11-2, the Broncos 7-1, Houston Texans 8-1, Chicago Bears 10-1, and San Francisco 49ers are 17-1. Anything stand out there, Mike? 7-1 about the Broncos? Seems odd.
Yeah, that does, but that's not a surprise to me. The one thing that stands out is that the shortest odds. The top two are from one division in the NFC, and the next two are from one division in the AFC, which is really interesting. And I can't really, you know, I wonder when was the last time it broke down that way. And I think that the fact that the Bills are fourth in favorites is kind of reflected in the line of the game against Denver this week. And I mean, Denver has that advantage of playing at home, which you would think would mean a little bit more to the bookies in terms of getting through to the conference championship and then playing that at home. But apparently not, because Buffalo seems to be the favorite over Denver.
Not anymore, I don't think. Not since
has that flipped
morning.
Again?
Yeah, well, it depends on, now you see, because it depends on who you're looking at, because obviously this can change based on what bookmaker you're with. I can tell you that the Bills on Betfair are even money and the Broncos are 17-20. That is on Betfair, which would make the Broncos ever such slight favourites. I had a good look last night at everything and it was Pick'em last night. I know Sky Bet were leaning the other way at one stage, and they are still leaning a little bit toward. You can get 11-10 about the Bills and 8-11 about the Broncos. So I'd say in the last 24 hours, we've seen the Broncos just slightly edged that game.
Yeah, Wednesday, the Broncos were getting a point and a half at home.
Wow, yeah, well, that's long since...
That's long gone, yeah.
Since gone, yeah. They're actually minus 1.5 now on a number of sites. John, I guess we'll get to it in the game. Annie, do you think that we're still not giving the Bears much love, considering,
yeah,
you know,
well,
they've got
a tough, it's a tough ask this weekend against the Los Angeles Rams. I guess we'll go into the individual games in a bit, but just of the odds that you mentioned there, I'm somewhat surprised to see. I think Seattle might be in a bit of trouble this weekend, certainly if the reports are to be believed about Sam Darnold having a bit of an injury issue ahead of this week's game, because that would obviously have some sort of impact on the markets there. So that's something to keep an eye on. That game begins late Saturday night at 1 a.m. So as you say here, and it's, you know, it's lunchtime on Friday here in Dublin. So I think there's some information due later on today about Sam Darnold. So I'd say keep your forecasts in your pocket until you kind of see that sort of stuff. But that'll be a big factor.
Well, yeah, I was reading about the NATO plans to defend Greenland in case of a U.S. attack.
That might affect the markets too.
Sam Darnold.
Yeah, this guy was explaining about how the U.S. doesn't have winter troops the way that Finland and Norway and Canada do. You know, and they're used to playing war in those conditions and everything like that. And I'm saying, this sounds like a preview of the Bears game.
Yeah. Who was? Did you send that around, Kieran? This is going to be the like one of the coldest games in playoff history or something? You were
Yes,
saying,
I
I
sent
think.
that around in our kind of group that it looks like it will be. I don't know if anyone is if you are bothered to like go on and look at the weather in Chicago, but it is freezing and there is a snowstorm. It's currently down to be minus 10 Fahrenheit throughout the whole day on Sunday, which is minus 23 Celsius, and gusts of wind up to 20 miles per hour. It's also worth noting that the Rams do not have a good record in bad weather games. In fact, they are 1-8 in the
Oh,
last
really?
in the games where it has been dramatic.
I thought you were going to say it's worth noting the Rams don't have any long sleeve jerseys. They're going to have to go out and
This is
order
definitely going to
some.
be a factor. I mean, we did see a bit of wind in what game was it? Is the Eagles 49ers, wasn't it? The one where Brady paid for his salary by just showing us how to throw the ball in wind, which considering it was actually very detailed and very interesting, considering he spent the year going, great pass, guys. John, before we get on to the games, the merry-go-round continues of coaches the way it always does this time of year. But obviously, in your own back garden there of the Browns, there's going to be some big changes next season for well,
Yeah,
everyone involved in it,
it's
really.
huge changes going on in the AFC North. As we were saying just before we hit record on this, Zach Taylor, the Cincinnati Bengals coach, is somehow the last man standing in the AFC North, despite, many people might have the opinion that he is the worst coach in the
Should be
AFC
gone. Yeah,
North.
should be gone.
So that's an interesting one. But yeah, so it really is. Obviously, we spoke last week about John Harbaugh leaving the Baltimore Ravens, and now you have Mike Tomlin leaving the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is just a massive change in that division. And you're looking back to these franchises who have had such long-standing coaches. Like, I think it's is it yeah the Steelers have had. I was astounded by this stat, and Mike, you can probably confirm this one, but they've
I
only
was
had
there.
they've had three coaches. They've had three head coaches since 1969, which is just
Yeah.
absurd to think about. They're about
When
to have their fourth, obviously, but
I was a late teenager.
yeah, so late teenager, a teenager in some years.
Chuck Noll followed by Mike Cowher, followed by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah,
Bill
which
Cowher
is
followed by
yeah.
Mike Tomlin. Yeah.
So it's always interesting to see, you do sort of see this when there is such a big sea change in an organization. And I think this crosses the boundaries of sports. You see it with, a lot of maybe Premier League football teams like, I don't know, Manchester United when Alex Ferguson left, when there is such a strong influence at a club or at a franchise or a team, when that figure leaves, it can leave such a huge vacuum that it's very, very difficult to fill. So time will tell how the fortunes will fare for both the Steelers and the Ravens. Obviously, Cleveland are looking for a new head coach now as well. What I would say about all of this, and not just with the AFC North going across the league, this is an interesting time to be looking for a new coach because roughly like one third of the teams in the league are looking for a new head coach at the moment. And there's some candidates out there, but it's. The market is diminishing in terms of the available candidates for top teams. So you have Harbaugh looks like he's off to the New York Giants. That looks like it's a done deal. It could even be, announced by the time people listen to this podcast, potentially. Tomlin seems to be staying out for all the reports say he's staying out for a year. He's going to do a year of media and then potentially return to a team. So we can kind of discount him from the managerial merry-go-round at the moment. But then you have others like. There's sort of a hierarchy being established now with Mike McDaniel being kind of some people are looking for him. Stefanski will go somewhere. I think Stefanski's going to end up in Tennessee. That's where I think he'll go.
Where coaches go to die.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. Well, I mean, Vrabel has got his, he went a roundabout sort of way, but he's doing okay now. But yeah, it is interesting times. So yeah, there's going to be. I think it's probably fair to say that the next season coming up, will have a little bit of a different sheen to it, with so many new, play callers and so many new coordinators throughout the league. So it'll be interesting. And as I was saying to Kieran in one of our WhatsApp groups, I think a lot of the fans, the Browns, just from what I'm reading online and looking through social media and stuff, it seems like Mike McDaniel is the favored choice. But it might also, I think a lot of people also want Jim Schwartz, who is the existing defensive coordinator there, and just get some sort of attacking mind into the offensive coordinator position, which would be interesting. But in a very Browns move, they're speaking to a 30-year-old guy on the Jaguars staff, which is just. I don't know about a 30-year-old head coach. Although McVay was kind of was he wasn't far off 30 when he took up the Rams job, and
Neither
as
was
well,
Tomlin.
yeah, that's also a fair point. And the other one is guy from, what's his, Aiden Doherty or something like that. He's on the Seattle
Oh, Aiden.
Seahawks.
Aiden.
Yeah, but
Aiden's a
he's
great
an
mic.
interesting. He's an Englishman. He'd be the first ever non-American coach. I'm not sure if there's ever been a Canadian coach, but certainly the first non-ever North American coach in NFL history. So that would be something, for the record
There's
books, I
someone in the
guess.
back of my mind telling me there is someone who actually wasn't born in the United States, but he was an American who was a head coach. I can't
Trump
think
got
of the
him out
name
quick.
right now. Aiden was coached the London Warriors at one point. He was in the he was in the player development program. He was an intern with Dallas. He's a good mind. He's had really good results. Although if you read the NFL, you would think Mike McDonald wasn't a defensive-minded head coach. It had nothing to do with it. But I think Aiden would make a great head coach, because for the main reason, I was listening to the NFL Daily podcast, and I like Greg Rosenthal a lot. But I'm listening, and one of the people on the panel was going, "Well, Mike Tomlin was 34 when he was hired as the head coach because he was such a great strategist, and that's what we get now, is that all the young coaches with great schemes are getting hired." And I'm saying that's just so completely backwards. Tomlin and John Harbaugh. Neither was a Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator. Tomlin had 1 year as a defensive coordinator with the Vikings, but he had been a secondary coach. They were hired because the teams wanted to establish a culture, plain and simple. And the Steelers wanted a culture that would not rock the boat that had already been established by Chuck Noll and by Bill Cowher. And that's not to say Tomlin wasn't adept defensively as a strategist. He had learned at Tampa too. From Tony Dungy and Monty Kiffin and Floyd Peters, it all came out of Minnesota. Bill Carroll was there at that time too. And when he went to Pittsburgh, he eventually wound up merging what he'd learned with Dick LeBeau's 3-4. But LeBeau was the defensive coordinator. He was also the head coach unsuccessfully at Carolina, at Cincinnati. And when you look at those three guys, Carroll and Tomlin and Dungy, the defenses are really, although they're different in formation and stuff, they really all depend on the same few factors. It's not that this was like the Brendan Staley of the 1970s, and I just can't believe all these PFF and next gen stats people who think that Mike McDaniel's a great coach because he's so he's got so much offensive nous and can make these schemes, and this guy's got great schemes. And Brandon Staley, PFF said, was the best coach in the NFL 2 or 3 years ago, because he had these great schemes. That's not what it takes to be a great head coach. It helps. But when you look at it through history, the guys who are the schemers, the Sid Gilmans and the Don Coryells on offense and the Buddy Ryans on defense were not great head coaches because they had difficulty establishing that kind of continuity of culture. And for better or worse, Tomlin, critics could call him an elevated Jeff Fisher, who always managed to stay at 500 or better. Or Harbaugh had a few losing seasons along the way as Baltimore rebuilt, but it's first and foremost about building a culture, and everybody under you understands the culture, and understands what you want to do, and you then understand what they can do, and that applies to players as well. There are guys who do it really well, like Bill Parcells, but Parcells always would wear out his welcome wherever he went to coach. And Harbaugh in New York, there's apparently some discussion going on about whether he's going to have GM type power, because they didn't fire Joe Shane. And Atlanta's bobbing up on the things I see, because Arthur Blank really wants a championship before he goes. And I thought Miami would be in there because I thought they specifically fired McDaniel after Harbaugh got fired. So we'll see about that, but. Yeah, I think it's just a great thing. This whole idea of a football team as a culture, or put it another way, as like the CIA, and he's the director of the CIA,
We gave the Super Bowl odds, just to let you know, AFC odds: Patriots 2-1, Broncos 5-2, Bills 11-4, Texans 7-2.
Ooh.
NFC conference winner 11-10, the Seahawks, the Rams 6-4, the Bears 5-1, and it's 17-2 about the San Francisco 49ers. Of course, they can be doubled up right now in a kind of a pick your Super Bowl market. So if you were to fancy the Bills and the Rams, that double is 8.38, so a tenner double on that is 93.75. So
that's
if
not
you are watching right now and you're are listening right now and you're thinking, with only four teams left in each conference, I think this will win that and this will win that. You know, this is the weekend to get the doubles on, because if they win into the next round, obviously,
yeah,
it will just be one
I'm
more.
amazed the Patriots are AFC favorites.
There you go. And so it leads us to the games. We got four games this weekend, 9:30 on Saturday, 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, 8 o'clock on Sunday evening, and 11:30 on Sunday night. We start with the Buffalo Bills, who went into Jacksonville in what was a pick'em game, and came away with the victory. Another game that was decided in the fourth quarter, decided on the last drive with an interception. The Buffalo Bills are, as we discussed, there's been a bit of flip-flopping in the market, but they are even money for this. The Broncos are 17-20 as it stands right now. The Broncos are 1.5-point favourites, and the over-under is 46.5 as it stands. John Balfe, I will come to you first. Were you impressed with how the Bills got it done in the end? Because they looked like they looked a little bit in trouble at one stage in the fourth quarter, if you ask me. The winning drive looked like it was going to be, but obviously then you knew Jacksonville would get the ball back with a minute to go, and it was on Trevor Lawrence. And I think his lack of ability, but the fact he'd never really been in that position before, like he's never had a game-winning drive in the playoffs to win, really showed almost immediately. But what did you think of the Bills first off? Sorry.
Well, yeah, I think that that's a good point here, and I was actually going to lead into basically what I was going to say about this game. I think the as it relates to that game specifically, I think, look, this isn't like we've said it all year, and certainly in the latter part of the season, it's a good Bills team. It's not like the best Bills team we've seen in recent years. I think most people would agree with that. But what they do have is Josh Allen. And in terms of what you're saying there about the difference between Josh Allen and Trevor Lawrence, it's those situations where Josh Allen has really shows his worth and his experience, I think, in the set. And the word I will use here is improvisation, because I think the Bills have kind of relied, like their offense is quite explosive, but I think it's quite volatile because it's very, very heavily reliant on just a bit of Josh Allen magic. And that was, to your point, Kieran, that was just sort of absent, I think, from the Jags for, you know, for a variety of reasons. And, you know, to give credit to the Bills, because as we've seen throughout the course of this season as well, beating the Jaguars is easier said than done. They came into this game in tremendous form, and, you know, as a well-oiled unit who were playing very, very well and winning, you know, game after game after game. So, yeah, I think as it goes to this game, it's a different proposition against Denver, who are looking like they're the sort of team as well this year who, you know, I don't think if their record was showed a couple more defeats on it, I don't think anybody would have any complaints about that, because they are a team who kind of pulled things out of the fire on more than one occasion late in games. And this, it seems like this season more than most has had a lot of fourth quarter drama, or perhaps that's just recency bias talking. But yeah, I think Josh Allen is the key in this one. He's a better player than Bo Nix, but Bo Nix can certainly helm a Sean Payton sort of offense in this game as well. So, you know, Denver have been pretty dominant at home, and that's a factor in this one as well. But I think the Broncos could also be quite well positioned to attack what is Buffalo's biggest weakness, and that is just by focusing on the run game and trying to strangle them that way as well. But I don't know. I think it's going to be a close, grinded out kind of game. But I'm leaning towards Buffalo just based upon experience.
What do you think, Mike?
I think that's the Josh Allen factor, really. And this is one of those games where it comes down to, you know, we've seen it with Brady, we've seen it with Rodgers. You know, I like the other team, but this team's got Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And the other team doesn't, you know, with at least with Jacksonville, you could say Jacksonville had Josh Allen too. And Josh Allen at Jacksonville, they were instrumental. They stopped James Cook, who was the leading rusher in the league, after all. They stopped him cold, basically. Mm. And the game was up to Josh Allen to win it for them, you know. And And I think that was hugely impressive by Allen to be able to come out and do that. You know, and Denver benefits from being at altitude, and other teams tend to run out of gas late in the game, which is one of the reasons why when they start coming back in the fourth quarter, they're so effective, you know, in breakdown play. And Bo Nix is really good in breakdown play. People don't, you know, they look at him and they don't realize what makes him work is not the fact that his arm is great or accurate, although it's not bad, but that he does a lot of playing in the fourth quarter, especially on the move. And he's a deceptive runner. He's a lot like Josh Allen, only smaller, you know, and younger, not as experienced. But otherwise, I kind of go with Kieran. I would take Buffalo. I don't think the point and a half matters a whole lot, the way that game is going to go, and what the over under is 46 and a half. My instinct there is to think that game could even go over.
San Francisco 49ers head to Seattle. It might be better because the 49ers in this power plant thing that's going on. I don't know if you've been reading about this, but everyone
That's
thinks
fantastic.
they're getting injured
That's
because of the power plant.
absolutely fantastic. Yeah, the electrical energy being produced is
Anyone
weakening the tendons and cartilage of the
buying it? Anyone buying it?
I don't think so. I saw some of the players were complaining that their field was more of a problem than the bursts of energy that are ruining their connective tissue. But
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. They are the most injured team in the
that's where
league.
the Super Bowl is, and they have been for a number of years, you
Yeah,
know,
since
the
they moved
most
to
or
there.
yeah. I think it's the commute to Santa Clara. The guys spend so much time in their cars that, you know, it ruins their knee tendons.
Well, they got to head to Seattle. The San Francisco 49ers are 27 to 10. The Seattle Seahawks are 3 to 10. The current spread is 7 points and it's over 44.5 is the over under. Mike, watching all the games, and they were all very exciting, and came down to the last. The only game that I really didn't feel like was actually that fun to watch was the 49ers and Eagles game, even though it came down to the very end as it did, in general, because I thought the Eagles were really, really dreadful. And in saying they were dreadful, there was still a middle period of the game. From the kind of end to the second quarter, all the way to the third quarter, where you just naturally assumed the Eagles were going to win because it was just constant three and outs, but you were like, eventually this team will get it together, and they did not.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it really ran completely parallel to what we said last week about the game. On paper, the Eagles win this one easily, but the Eagles don't play on paper. And they're remarkably inefficient in what they do. But the Pitillo, the offensive coordinator, has taken the fall for all of this. And you have to say that the play calling was not inspired, whereas San Francisco pulled out the stops. They got a trick play to get a touchdown to McCaffrey, which proved decisive on a pass from Juwan Johnson. Where
So
when
they
the
played the
Eagles were,
same play on third and fourth down in the crucial,
yeah,
right? The fourth and eight, they copied the third and eight,
at the end of
which,
the game, yeah, which
yeah.
was basically, I mean, you're in short territory, and they ran what they call four verticals, basically all four, two receivers on one side, two on the other side, and they all ran straight. No deception, no picks, no crossing routes, nothing like that. And the Niners were sitting in a four deep zone, which is like the perfect defense for that because each guy is defending his zone and the receiver's running to him. You know, he doesn't have to turn around and keep up with the guy going deep. So I just thought that was. It was just a horrible finish to the game, which is in that situation was a game they could have won with a little bit of creativity. You know, you've got AJ Brown, you've got Smith. They both can go across the field, make tremendous catches. Although having said that, AJ Brown, who pouted on the bench for most of the game and got into what's
Well,
his
he's a
name's
drop.
face.
He had a
Sir
droppy night, a droppy
Yeah, and
night.
then he had a crucial drop, for which Sirianni has already forgiven him. So, you know, that game, I think in the end we liked the Niners with the points. I liked Philadelphia. I had Philadelphia to win the game. I couldn't get past that, and the under was an in-play bet, and that both those both came true. So you know, I thought that was pretty well done by us. And Kittle's out. They might get Pearsall back, and they really need Pearsall against Seattle, because the way Seattle just shut them down in the last week of the season, it was 13-3 game, and San Francisco never really looked close to establishing themselves offensively. I think that kind of repeats. I think you said at the beginning, Sam Darnold's carrying some injury. That would be the only thing to hold me back from backing Seattle. If Darnold is hurt, the Niners defense played well over their heads. You know, it was such a contrast. Philadelphia, really strong defensive team and strong defensive game, but Philadelphia just did never this season played up to their capabilities. And San Francisco's defense always was playing over their heads, which is a tribute, I think, to Robert Saleh's coaching. And he's in the mix for a head coaching return, I think, sooner rather than later. But I take Seattle in this one. San Francisco with the points again could be okay. It was 7.5, and I would probably recommend 7.5. It's down to 7 because people were grabbing it. So yeah, you know, keep an eye on it though.
John, yeah, I mean, 7 is a lot in the playoffs when you consider only one game would have covered a 7-point spread in the wildcard weekend, which is the games where you would have assumed that higher teams play lower, if you know what I mean. So now
I
we
do.
are kind of meeting each other in the middle, which is why there's no, like, the Seattle Seahawks are 3-10. That's the shortest price. The rest of the games are pretty close. So 7's going to tempt a few out there.
You can count me amongst that few, Kieran. I think that is
Ooh.
quite a tempting number, just for a couple of reasons here, I suppose. Number one, I would just. We've both mentioned it now, but just keep an eye on the Sam Darnold situation. That will have an impact. But other than that, even despite that, a lot of Seattle came out of the blocks really, really hot this year, and they've had a really, really good season. But it's hard to ignore the fact that they've slipped a little bit in terms of how impressive their offense has been. And like the offense has mostly just been about how good Jackson Smith and Jigba has been, because they haven't actually really even thrown the ball all that much. It's just that he has just been an extraordinarily efficient receiver for them this year. But outside of him, and if they, if he's removed from, like, this is a guy who's averaging, 100 yards a game kind of thing so far this year. And if you can put a cap on that, it really, begs further questions of Seattle's offense, and to see if they can sort of work around that, and especially against a team like the 49ers as well. But if Darnold does play, the other little bit of caution I would have is look what happened last season in the playoffs when he was representing the Vikings. Great season, and then as soon as push came to shove, he just seemed to be a little bit kind of maybe a little bit of a deer in the headlights, so to speak, because it didn't come off for Minnesota last year. So as it relates to this game, like, why do I think the 49ers are very, very much in play in this one? I think they've a good offense. They're in terms of statistics, they're marking near the top in kind of where you want them to be. Like, the Kittle injury is big, and I completely agree about Ricky Pearsall. They will need. Certainly absent Kittle, they will need a lot of other players to step up, and certainly Pearsall would be one of those players if he's on the field. But as well as that, Kyle Shanahan has a lot more playoff experience than McDonald. Brock Purdy has been in these positions before. If they're underdogs, I don't think, and if they go behind as well, I just don't think this San Francisco team are really going to, panic or anything like that. I think they will be able to stay in the game. And I think some of those things I just said there, the opposite sort of stands, or at least there are certain questions for Seattle. A less proven head coach, the Sam Darnold situation for a variety of reasons is interesting to me. But I think more so than anything, the thing I feel strongest in is kind of what you alluded to at the top here. And I think this will be a closer game than the line is suggesting, the 7 or 7.5. It was 7.5 yesterday, 7 today, I think. And I think, San Francisco's experience, they're efficiency with the offense, and also crucially their familiarity with the opposition points to this being a closer game than some of the numbers suggest.
Okay.
Two points quickly. Fred Warner is back. I strongly doubt if he's going to play, having been out all this time. And I mean, you could argue you got nothing to lose apart from injuring him again. with maybe a more serious injury. But just the fact that he's out there probably helps San Francisco a little bit because he's obviously a team leader. And he's, and the second one is San Francisco played Saturday night, and now they're playing back on the other side of the country on Saturday. And
this
that's
has
a
been
short
late, though,
week.
Huh?
Yeah, that's a short week when you consider Seattle's had the whole week off. You know, I'm amazed that they didn't move the Rams game, Rams Chicago to Saturday, because they both played on the Saturday, play this one on Sunday, just to be fair to one of the teams. And I think I understand kind of LA, Chicago, they want prime time on the bigger night, when there's a bigger audience. But still, guys, you know, give us a break, please.
Yeah, that has been brought up about how they fix these things, but it's the way it goes. To Sunday's game, 8 o'clock, no, six or half six or whatever it was last week. I think it was six, wasn't it? Houston Texans head to the New England Patriots. It's 6-4 about the Texans. The Patriots are 8-15, 3 points spread. 40.5 is the over under. Mike, I'll come to you first on this one because obviously you're a big Patriots guy. But one thing that struck me over Wildcard Weekend is that with both Texas and with the Patriots, the way they won their games, I don't think we learned anything that we wouldn't have talked about last week. In that, they just kind of got it done.
I think that's true, except maybe that Houston got it done even more so than we expected. You know, I didn't expect their defense to be so dominant against the Steelers, and also, to be honest, I didn't expect their offense to be able to cope with the Steelers as easily, not easily, but, you know, as well as they did, given, and maybe CJ Stroud wasn't playing so well, partly because the Steelers were a good defensive team. It's really hard to figure out how good a defensive team New England is. They had Milton Williams back. They had Chiasson back. They had Landry back. They had Spillane back, which is kind of the core of their defense. And the guys were all hurt, but they didn't rush them back. They were willing to play the wild card game without Spillane, for example. He played. So forget what I said. But they were willing to play the Week 18 game without him, and the Week 17 game without Williams and 18. So I think the question is, how much better is New England's defense than Pittsburgh's? They're not better, but I think they're not much worse either. Christian Gonzalez may well be out, concussion protocol. That will hurt them a lot because Nico Collins may be out for Houston, which is going to hurt them even more. So that's kind of a wash if both those guys are out. And May, I think, is a much more productive quarterback than CJ Stroud. Stroud really hasn't got back to that rookie season. And to me, that makes a big difference. So the big question is, can Will Campbell work against Will Anderson at left tackle and defensive end? Can Morgan Moses work on the right side, or can they really tear up the Patriots inside? And that's going to be the decider. I thought May was under constant pressure and coped with it very well last week. He had a couple of turnovers, but he made plays when he had to make plays. And of course, their running game and passing to the running backs worked really well for them. So that's going to be interesting, too, because Houston also, I think, has the best secondary in the league, as well as having the best pass rush in the league. So it is a really tough one. And Houston's getting 3 points.
You like that? You like that? You like that?
It's not quite
dog,
enough. Yeah. It's not quite enough. But, you know, at some point, I just keep thinking at some point the Patriots bubble has to burst. And
well,
this will be a huge test for them, because Houston is the best defensive team in the league.
And what, John, I'll let you take from there, because for either of these sides, I mean, the Texans might have had an eye on an AFC championship game. But I'm not entirely sure the Patriots did, but I mean, they're both one game away from, you know, being in the AFC championship game, and then, you know, an hour away from a Super Bowl appearance.
That's true, Kieran.
I've done both. I've done.
Good answer, John.
I feel like I'm the way I set that up was like being the like mid-afternoon show on the NFL Network, where like you've got somebody talking, just talking for the sake of it.
Exactly. Let's none of us ask questions of each other. We'll all just talk. But I agree completely with Mike. I think the biggest factor in this entire game is the Texans defense, and that will have a huge bearing on the result of this and who advances to the AFC Championship game. It's two good defensive teams, but you know, Texans are the better defensive team. They're the best defensive team in the NFL. And I do have a little bit of concern. Again, I completely agree with Mike about the disparity between Drake May and CJ Stroud. May is, you know, he's an MVP candidate. He's had a tremendous season. He looks like the guy. So if Stroud is a good Stroud, this is the sort of situation you want your young quarterback. Now I'm saying this to both teams. You want your young quarterback to deliver, because this is you know, as momentous as it gets in the NFL for the most part. But I do have concerns a little bit about the Patriots' offensive line. You've seen them previous, like it's not a bad one, but now we're just talking about the cream of the crop kind of situations here. It's not a bad offensive line. And I think a lot of, you know, Will Campbell, their left tackle, was drafted highly. He was the fourth pick in the draft, and he's looked for the most part to be, you know, a very, very good pick. But when he has come up against elite pass rushers, and I'm just thinking back to the Myles Garrett game when they played against Cleveland, I think Garrett got 5 sacks of Drake May, and like you'd imagine that May is in for a bit of a similar situation this time around. And whoever the I'm blanking on the left guard of the Patriots now as well, but
Wilson, another rookie.
Yeah, so on that side of their line, they have lift a lot of pressures and a lot of sacks. I think it's somewhere between 16 or 17 sacks just based on that, just on those two guys alone. And like you say, Will Anderson is up there. He's a top 3, top 4 pass rusher in the league, you'd have to say as well. So that's going to be one of the key stories of the game. But the other one as well, like, you know, in games like this, the over-under in this one is 40.5, or at least it was when I wrote it down recently. I'm not sure if it's changed or how that's looking, but that's what I have here at the moment. And that's obviously suggesting the market anticipates this being a low-scoring kind of game. And when you have two good defenses, you know, this, it's, you know, 1 + 2 + 3, that's kind of, it's the logical conclusion to draw from this sort of thing as well. So in games like this where it's forecast as a defensive battle, I put a lot of faith in the team that I think has the better defense. And as good as the Patriots have been this year, the Texans have a better defense. I think that's what most people would say. But then again, the Patriots will have a better offense. So that's what we're looking at in this game. So it's a tricky one. But I think in low total games like this one is going to be, the team with the best defense getting the points is the correct bet. So I am sort of looking, if you're looking at the line in this one, the Texans getting 3, I think that's the way to go, just from a hedging your bets and making the best sort of decision with your money kind of way. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Patriots advance. And even if they advance by a point or two, that's still the Texans on this one. But, you know, a line of 3 is difficult to factor into this sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm sort of leaning towards the Texans in this one a little bit. It would be a big surprise. It's the Patriots at home, and the Patriots are kind of a storied, you know, postseason team, but they haven't been for a number of years. So this will be a big test for both teams. And I just have suspicion that the Texans might get their nose in front.
Okay. Interesting thing. Last week when the Patriots won in the wild card game against the Chargers, who was the head coach on the winning team in the previous playoff game, the last playoff game the Patriots had played before that?
Bill Aaron. Belichick? What?
That was their first playoff win it was their first playoff game since 2020, I think, or whatever. When they lost in the playoffs. Yeah, the last time when the Patriots lost, who was the winning coach in that game? Well, I've just given it away.
Oh, who did they? Oh, who beat? You'll have to tell me.
Mike Vrabel.
Oh, really?
Vrabel and the Titans beat them in the playoffs. And now Vrabel's won 2 in a row in Foxborough.
The last game, 11:30 on Sunday night, is obviously going to be very, very interesting for a variety of reasons. So John will have a serious job on here because we are going to talk about weather. But at the moment, the LA Rams are 1-2. The Bears are 13-8. The spread is 3.5. Rather surprisingly, the match total obviously is 48.5. with the Rams regularly hitting 60-plus games, you can kind of see why. But, John, let's talk about
that
the
total
conditions.
Is dropping like an AJ Brown pass.
That's very smart. Right off the bat, the under is looking good here, isn't it? But anyway,
how well can Matt Stafford pass in the snow? You notice my background. If we were on YouTube, I've got a frozen lake covered with snow. I'm wearing my Norwegian sweater, and I've got my what's the guy? Jeremiah Johnson beard.
I'm looks like Soldier Field right day. There behind you.
What do you think, John? Trees. What do you think?
I think that the Rams are a better team on both sides of the ball, and I don't think that they will gift. That might be too harsh a word, but I don't think they'll gift the Chicago Bears the types of mistakes they will need that keeps this game close. So the line is -3.5, or at least it was at some point in the recent past. And I think the Rams can probably win this one by more than 3.5 is what I would think.
Ooh, have you ever seen Puka Nacua play in snowshoes?
I haven't. So yeah, those are the factors. And look, you know, we're all trying to predict the future here. The weather will have an impact, but I think that's just the Rams are one of the most complete teams in the league. They're a more disciplined team, I think, as well. And it's an accumulation of little small granular elements of this game. I just think all add up to the Rams being the team.
Kind of like snow.
Yeah, exactly. But all that said, I will echo what I said just a minute or two ago, but the total or the over-under in this one as it stands is 48.5, and that is very much in jeopardy, in my opinion.
When I looked at 50.5, that was my best bet of the week. It was like love at first sight. So I agree with John. I don't think Sean McVay is going to be massively affected by the weather. I think they're actually built pretty well to pound the rock through the snow, Kyron Williams especially, you know, and I don't think he'll be afraid to run the ball and maybe run some short play action. I think Ben Johnson may have more trouble adjusting to the really bad weather. But if it's close toward the end of the game, again, in breakdown time, Caleb Williams has been great in fourth quarters, you know. And the Bears defense is really well constructed for turnovers. I mean, Byard especially at safety, but they get a lot of loose balls and stuff. I agree with pretty much everything that John said about the game and LA plus the points. You know, yes, they're not playing in an LA thing, and yes, Stafford's not playing in a dome in Detroit or in good weather in LA, but I think it's not like the Bears are built for the snow. Ben Johnson's offense requires a lot of cutting. You usually have the advantage over the defense in that, but it's also harder to execute on the passes. So yeah, I go with John here.
The best bet is go with John.
Let's just go with John. Match results. We're going Bills, even money. We're going Seahawks. Seahawks. I'm talking about the match now. Just the match. We're not doing
just to win.
Just to win.
Just to win. Yeah, I'm Seahawks.
Seahawks, Patriots, and
I'm probably LA Patriots Rams. There, and I'm probably Rams there. I might switch to Chicago if the weather gets worse.
It is a tenner on that would pay $60. It's 5-1, basically.
Not so bad.
5-1 on the Bills.
Why is Chicago the odd man out in these playoffs?
They're the only land mammal. Oh no, is it Bill? Bronco is a land mammal.
So are Rams.
Yeah, all the visiting teams have 5 losses. all 4 of the visiting teams are 13-5 on the season.
Oh.
All three of the other home teams have 3 losses on the season. So Denver and Seattle are 14-3, New England's 15-3, and Chicago is 12-6. They actually have the worst regular season record in the league. Not in the league. I mean, in this round of the playoffs, which just to me just seems like a funny anomaly.
Funny. Strong word for it.
Okay.
Let's get to the best bets of the week.
Okay.
I'm actually
last
very
week?
Interested to hear about me last week.
Yeah,
go
you
for
would
my
be.
Best go.
Yeah, we'll get right to it then. Says Kieran, who was in third place beforehand, had the over in Buffalo Jacksonville at 51.5, and the game turned out 27-24, which, if you add it up, adds up to 51, and that's what we call a bad beat.
Oh,
That's what
Kieran.
I thought. No, that's what I thought because it moved down a point at one stage, and then it went back up at kickoff. And I remember looking at it going, oh, that's moved again. I wonder if that could be an issue. And as I counted it up, now in fairness, at
Turns out it was an
halftime,
issue.
at halftime, you
John.
would never would have said that it was going to come near it. There was four touchdowns in the fourth, I think, something like that. I
Yeah,
mean, by
exactly.
halftime, I think the over-under was 40 in the game. It was, anyway.
Were there any missed field goals? I think I
I
remember.
Yes,
I
there was.
sighed. I sighed in that one. Because I thought I lost taking the under on Green Bay and Chicago, which was 46, and they combined for 58. And the bet I had wanted to make was taken by John, who phoned it in last week. And phone bids take precedent. John was
Dallas
under
plus three
in
again, was it?
John was under what was it, 30. 39 5 for Houston Pittsburgh. That finished with a 30-6 game, so he did that comfortably. And with that win, that means that I am still in first place. The regular season
Yay.
winners still in first place at 11-7. John's 10-8, and Kieran is 8-10.
Oh,
So you're not totally
Kieran.
eliminated. Yeah, if you run the table now,
He's
three
playing.
in a
He's
row.
tanking now. He's playing for the
He's
first pick
not
in the draft.
tanking. He's not tanking. He's really mulling.
It's not been your year in this. And also,
Not,
you didn't make
not.
the playoffs in fantasy football. So I
I know, which is
wonder.
quite rare that I don't do that
You
either.
didn't make the
Yeah, I
playoffs
know.
last year either, Kieran.
I think I did. Oh, I don't remember now. But I like to think I do pretty well usually. But no, this is no. It's not been my year. No, and I'm pretty sure my penis has got smaller.
No way I'd know. Although, as somebody told
Although
me,
we're all on a camera,
who
so when the show
as
ends.
someone who yeah, as someone who was in a position to know told me, you can't tell the difference anyway.
What do you got
So
for this week?
who? Okay, what do I've got? Like I said, Chicago. I've cooled my jets on Chicago
Wait, shouldn't I go
since the
first? Because
whole.
I was the only one who won last
Oh,
week.
fine, John. My God, you love
So
the
I just want to
Blues.
get in there with
Jesus.
the I want to get in there with the under and Rams and Bears. That's what I want to get in with.
Okay, you can have it.
Whoever won last week goes first. That's the long-standing
Okay,
rule on the show.
you can have it. But
Okay,
you
thanks,
notice as
guys.
soon as I mentioned what I was. Okay, so Rams Bears under. And I'm going under in San Francisco, Seattle.
What's the number in that one?
45-5. 45.
44 or 5.
Oh, well, it looks like a lot of other people are going under too. But I'll stick with it at 44-5.
I'll go over in the Broncos Bills. I'll go back to the well because, well, I was very unlucky. And actually, would have won if you took it on Friday. But anyway.
46-5.
Yeah. And that is it for
That's
us.
actually not bad. I mark these games like with an up or down arrow, and I've got that marked as an over game. So
We go. Can I change
we're
then?
mixed.
And that is it for us. My thank you to John Bath. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, guys.
And to Mike, as always. And that is it. Another episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Harrison. Mike, you got a closing statement you want to make? You're
one
saying
point. Yeah, John, that was the best steal. Interception. The best interception of the season. John
Just
cut me
kinda
off
took it, yeah.
before
Squeaky
I could
wheel gets
say
the oil, Mike. You gotta make your voice heard.
it. That's it. We'll be
Okay.
back next week for the AFC and NFC conference games. It should be an absolute great weekend. Hopefully, all your bets win, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.